Thank you for tuning in to The Prepare Podcast. I'm your host, Sarah Makula. The Prepare Podcast is a Salvation Army podcast where we meet with women of faith and in ministry as they share their experiences and wisdom to prepare and equip us in our faith pursuits and callings. After years of leading, managing, and supervising, today, Commissioner Carol looks back on her years of service and shares the advice she'd give herself as a leader during her 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, and today in her 60s. Take notes, my friends. Here is my conversation with Commissioner Carol. Welcome to the Prepare Podcast, Commissioner Carol Seiler. Thank you for joining me today.
Oh, my privilege. Thank you.
Yeah, this is exciting because you are maybe just a few days away from your final days here at Territorial Headquarters in the Central Territory. Do you have senioritis?
No, I don't think so. It's, you know what it feels like? It's like being a college graduate. So Retirement is a, because we feel young and healthy, it's kind of like, oh, new options, new opportunities, and it's exciting adventure ahead when you still feel healthy and everything. I'm really grateful for that part of it. So, no, not senioritis, not at all.
You're working right up to the last moment.
Pretty much. Mm-hmm. We leave Friday, 2 days.
Wow. So cool. Well, why don't you, you know, for any of our listeners that are unfamiliar with who Commissioner Carol Seiler is, can you give us a brief description of who you are in your position now and kind of where you started in so many words?
Okay. Briefly, right now, I'm the one of the territorial leaders of the Central Territory, and my official title has been Territorial Coordinator of Strategic Mission Planning. I often tell people to be a strategic thinker, you have to irritate people, and fortunately, I'm really good at that, irritating people. But it's about how you think differently about what you're approaching, how you work through solutions together, and that energy that comes from that. I actually have been doing that since about 2002, maybe even before that in some of the other appointments and positions I've had. Partly, I think, because of my education and training. I was trained as a nurse at the University of Toronto and worked as a public health nurse for a couple of years before deciding to see the world and moved to California and met my husband at the Army. And since then have been seeing the way the Army applies that practical ministry response to people where they're at and then does it in a holistic way. So I love the fact that God enters into it and it's okay. Mm-hmm. In the way we do it in the Army.
Hmm. Well, when you were talking about your current position in the strategic leadership or, you know, the strategic piece that you bring, the couple things come to mind. What I've learned from you is about to ask and be okay with asking a lot of clarifying questions. And one of my other favorite things I hear you say, and it just really unlocked a few things for me because we often hear things that aren't being said. You often say, don't hear what's not being said. Yeah. And then a few years ago, we talked about about goals and outcomes. And I often ask myself what the outcome should be or what the hope is. Like there's a goal and then what would be the outcome of that goal?
And why is that important?
Right.
That's one of the things we do with some of the goal setting in the divisions and the core. It's like, why? Mm-hmm. Why is that important?
Right.
Why does it matter? Mm-hmm.
Well, so a few months ago, I invited a few retired officers to join me on the Prepare Podcast. And the Prepare Podcast exists to invite women of faith and in ministry so that we can learn from them and be prepared and equipped in our faith and pursuits and callings. And these retired officers, I asked them if they could look back at the decades, you know, what they all, you know, you might start your officership in different, stages. But for most of them, they started in their 20s, so they could reflect back on their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, and then 60s and maybe beyond if, a few of them are older than that even, and really give themselves if they could look back at those decades of their lives, what specific advice would they give themselves in regards to leadership? And so that was so well received, and people were really excited about it. And so I just think that'd be really neat to hear from you. And so many people look up to you for a variety of reasons, and most recently the married woman officer finally receiving her own pay stub, being recognized in that way for their contribution to service and work. So, you know, that's going to be a part of your legacy. So I think it'd be really cool to hear from you about looking back in the past and what you might tell yourself in those different decades.
Yeah, that is an interesting question. And when I think about it, some of the learning that I would tell myself is because I wasn't actually in leadership in some of those really mm-hmm. early decades, but I learned some things. I wasn't an officer till I was 29, but I worked in a variety of positions in my 20s. And I think I would say, I know I would say to myself or another 20-year-old in the 20s this time, it's okay to make mistakes and to learn things, but don't make really bad choices mm-hmm. because you burn your bridges. And I think about my first job and the way I responded sometimes or didn't do things for my supervisor. And she was actually trying to coach me and to teach me, but I was too I don't know whether I was sassy or just too stupid. I didn't stop and think of this is a learning opportunity, mm-hmm. and she expects me to be new mm-hmm. and make mistakes. So I may have burned a couple of bridges with mm-hmm. that supervisor because I wasn't particularly nice person to work with, and mm-hmm. I thought I knew a lot more than I did. That was the 20s. So, yeah.
Be teachable.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
Make good choices.
Make good choices.
Don't make really bad choices because they do have consequences.
Yeah. The burning the bridge part, yeah, that's especially, I mean, if we have listeners in the Salvation Army, that's so important because, I mean, the first part is that we're Christ followers and to respect each other is so important. But then we're also in the Salvation Army. You're going to see each other again and you never know who's going to be your boss. Right.
Well, that part of it, too. But it's like there are ways you can learn and make mistakes and take advantage of being what I put in quotes, being new, be the new. Mm-hmm. That's when they moved away from having a lieutenant to captain right away. Well, one of the things we all said was, oh, you can no longer say I'm just a new lieutenant. That's like, you know, take advantage of being a new lieutenant of those 5 years mm-hmm. of learning and embrace learning. That's a whole lot easier to say now than it was in the 20s.
Mm-hmm. Embrace learning. Very good. All right. For your 30s then?
Well, when I thought about this one, I think I would say ask more questions. And I say that because a lot of times I asked my questions with an attitude. I think I was still carrying my 20s forward, but it was like, oh, why are we doing this or why do we do that? And I would say ask more questions, but like you said something about the clarifying question, mm-hmm. ask them respectfully. Ask a clarifying question. Help me understand why this is needed. Just help me understand that. Can I ask a clarifying question on that? I would just say ask more questions because by then you're sort of sorting it out. You know you don't know everything. Mm-hmm. You're in your 30s. You know you don't know everything. You're starting to figure that out. And you can't be in six places at the same time. So sometimes you have to prioritize and you ask the questions. But you have to understand that other people may have a whole lot more rationale, understanding. Like you're only the tip of the iceberg when you see the scenario. Mm. So ask the clarifying questions like why – What part of this iceberg am I seeing and what's under it? How did it come to be this way?
From maybe like a core perspective, say you're a core officer, you're fairly new to that space, it's clarifying questions to the congregation and the leaders above you, just like any
like anything. Tell me the story. Tell me how this happened. Tell me how, you know, help me understand this. And you can do it in a way that it's kind of like you're interviewing someone. Just talk about this for a little while. How did you get to this point? You know, but not in an attitudinal way, just in a, I want to understand where we're mm-hmm. at, so then we can talk about where we're going.
Mm-hmm. Because maybe you walk into the situation and you're thinking, I'm going to ask this question so I can start changing things. But maybe once you start asking, you realize actually there's a great purpose in this.
Yeah. What was the rationale? Mm-hmm. But, you know, you don't see that until your 50s when people come in their 30s and have an attitude about asking the questions. And you just want to say, you know, here's how it came about. Here's the history. Let me give you some history on this. So if I was reversing it, like I said, I'd say to my 30-year-old self, ask about the history. Ask a clarifying question.
Does an instance come to mind?
Yeah, they might be too personal. But, yeah, you know, you sort of – I think I did it more with leadership, you know, just like how could they be so silly? Don't they get this? Why'd they do that? And sometimes you don't realize that people may have been – and the women's allowance issue may be a part of it. People may have been making small steps, progress along the way. There might be a time when someone consciously put aside an issue because the emotion of it meant it wouldn't change well yet. Mm. But it didn't mean they weren't working on it. So I guess seeing yourself as a part of a continuum as well is really important. And it's a continuum whether you're at the core. It's a continuum with your employees. It's a continuum with soldiers. And change doesn't happen overnight.
Yeah, that reminds me of the parable of the planting the seed, watering the seed.
Exactly.
All of that.
1 Corinthians 3, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You're just
Apollos,
a part.
Paul. Mm-hmm. It's God's work. And that takes effort to begin to see how you fit into God's work on that.
Mm-hmm.
So another one might be that you recognize at one point is for such a time as this, you're at this place, you may be playing this part in it. But if you don't ask the questions, you may not know how you're fitting in. And you might feel like it doesn't, you don't.
Mm-hmm. And I think probably, I mean, I think maybe at every age you want to see results. But I think at these 20s and 30s, you want to see things happen so quick. And how the amount of patience it requires to trust that God is sovereign over these things. And that, yeah, you're just a piece. You're watering this time.
You keep pushing it forward, but you do it in a way that doesn't, if we're taking a garden analogy, you don't destroy the roots just because you're so eager to dig the soil.
Mm. Okay. Next one is the 40s. And where were you when you guys were in your 40s? What appointment?
We were a couple of appointments. One of them, we were new divisional leaders. That was near the end of the 40s. We were also social services. I was social services in the Northwest. And actually, we worked with HIV/AIDS, I did a lot of that in the Southwest and in the Northwest. So it was kind of more social conscious stuff. I also had teenagers at home.
Mm-hmm.
You also start going through all that stuff that women do in their 40s. And I would say that my tip to myself, or what I would say, what I started to learn was to take more awareness of emotional intelligence, not to take everything personally. And I used to sometimes joke about it when things would happen. I'd say, look, I have teenagers at home. I have teenage daughters at home. I can handle this. And I'd say that to myself and say that to others. But sometimes you're reacting like you're in the midst of hormone stuff. And everything's drama if you're not careful. So I think I would say, you know, it's not always personal. It's just sometimes other people have other things going on. And you, I think in your 40s, you start to realize that people, you can't decontextualize yourself or the people around you.
How would you say that our, you know, if our listeners are listening, they're like, what does she mean by emotional intelligence? And how do I obtain emotional intelligence?
Daniel Coleman. It's a book. It's a body of knowledge Daniel Coleman writes, but it has to do with that self-awareness of understanding the emotions that are going on in yourself and just reacting with people differently. So it's about not being developmentally, not being an adolescent where the world revolves around you or a three-year-old and those kind of things. And so that level of self-awareness and then how you process things – actually, it's a really important trait in the workplace and in ministry because there's a whole lot of stuff that gets real personal.
Do you have any other resources you would recommend for helping someone build their emotional intelligence?
I think that's actually a scriptural element of holiness.
Okay.
So, I mean, Daniel Coleman writes it from, you know, the psychology and the sociology piece, but the parallel with actually becoming Christ-like is really awesome. I mean, it's...
Well, one of the resources that I was introduced to was it's called Emotionally Healthy Leadership or Emotionally Healthy Spirituality. Mm-hmm. And they've got a number of wonderful books, but they also have a great podcast that I happily recommend to any listener. And so much of one of the things I just noticed on their Facebook, what they were talking about, the value of learning confrontation. And I just, it's so hard, but it's so important, you know, to in the workplace, in leadership, to sort out how to have healthy confrontation, because the passive aggressive, the passive aggressive nature some people bring can be so damaging.
Oh, yeah. And actually, that was what I was thinking of in the 50s. Like in your decade of the 50s, you begin to learn differently. And maybe it's because your teens have launched it, like if you've had kids on that. And it was there's a book I'm reading recently called Uncommon Candor for Leaders. It's a really interesting approach. And I would say that candor and clarity then need to be part of your leadership and ministry in your 50s. And part of that is understanding that being Christian and being nice does not mean not telling the truth.
Mm-hmm.
That's double negative. It means being truthful and respectful, being clear about expectations, saying things directly but not meanly.
Mm-hmm.
The book mentions that candor is not saying, I'm going to be brutally honest, because why would you want to be brutal?
Yeah.
Right? That's not even Christian. So it's like, how do you have conversations that are direct, that are candor, that are as a supervisor? Because by your 50s, you may be doing more of that or you're doing more guiding that way. But it's dishonest to be nice if you're not doing that all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
And so it becomes then a matter of congruence. That's a healthy emotional intelligence is about congruence as well. It means that what you say and how you behave come together. They're similar. They work. There's an integration of who you are. And that's scriptural.
I mean,
that's, again, becoming more Christ-like, and it's a work in progress.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, I think that holiness is a progressive piece because I need to approach it every day like that.
You're giving me a lot of things that are coming to mind about holiness, grace, being honest and direct and respectful, and like you said, like not. How did you put it? Like, you know, like being nice.
Being nice can be dishonest.
Can be dishonest. Well, then what would be the proper interaction?
Well, it kind of depends on the situation, but sometimes it's saying this is what I observe. This is where it's difficult for me to see this happening in a workplace if you're doing a supervisory thing.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes it's that, you know, when I hear this being a part of your conversation, and then I see you acting this way, I'm puzzled by it. Help me understand that, which may become part of rolling it all together, asking the questions.
Mm-hmm.
I had to fire probably a few more people by the time I was in my late 40s and 50s. Mm-hmm. And really difficult situations and saying, you know, this is not behavior that befits the Salvation Army. We're not going to do it this way.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a choice. You have a choice to do it the way that a Christian organization works, to be fair, to follow the rules, or you have a choice not to. But I'm not going to, as your supervisor, let that keep going.
Wow.
We're having these conversations. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you know, sometimes they were really scary because mm-hmm. people get really upset with you. But then it's
very
like
emotional, yeah.
You don't take it personally. You mm-hmm. build on that and you say, this is uncomfortable. It's awkward. These are mm-hmm. hard conversations.
And I'm sure for good management that one would not let it that wouldn't be the first conversation about it, right?
No, it wouldn't be a surprise. You'd be having regular conversations of that's where the clarity comes mm-hmm. in. This is what I expect. This is what I need to have happen. I found with some employees now or people that I've supervised, you know, if you start off with that and you're direct and you're respectful and you're clear, you can have these harder conversations at a much less emotional level mm-hmm. down the road. And sometimes you're problem solving. It's like, okay, that didn't work out the way we had hoped it would work.
Mm-hmm.
What do we need to do differently?
Yeah. But if you've invested time and energy into trying to help influence that behavior, but at the end, the person has to make the decision.
And I think the other part of that is that you have to own your own feeling about it. So what you might be saying is, I understand that this is really sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
You actually don't understand how they feel,
mm-hmm.
but you can understand that this is a sensitive conversation.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Okay, you have to get going very soon because you have a very busy schedule up and this is your last week. So can you wrap up with kind of like the end, like you touched on the 50s and now kind of the 60s, that's when most people retire. So
yes, well, remember, I married, you know, it's on his age, right?
Oh, sure.
No, but I am 65, mm-hmm. so I'm halfway through that traumatic. The fives are the most traumatic. I was thinking about that, and it was like it kind of hit me a couple of years ago that I was transitioning now to a teaching coaching rather than just supervise. And I think that's a cool thing about the 60s. Mm. You're transitioning differently. And now when I ask more questions, it's to help the person problem solve.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like that coaching you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I
mm-hmm.
make sense? I'm not telling people what to do anymore. I'm not trying to force it to happen.
You're helping them connect the dots.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, I'm not going to be there. Mm-hmm. And now what I want to do is embed that in other people so that whatever it is we've been working on is theirs
mm-hmm.
and they figure that out and pass that on. So it's been really interesting. And I said to somebody about 2 years ago, I'm over 60. I have three people that have just recently asked me if I could mentor them. It was like really traumatic, you know. I was like, but then I realized, yeah, that's part of the aging process.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe I've been helpful. But it's like, actually, I don't need to know all the answers now. Mm-hmm. What I want to do is help find the answers together.
Mm-hmm.
And I want that to become your skill mm-hmm. so that then you pass that on and move that forward.
Okay, last thing real fast. What would you like – almost – she'll be Commissioner Heidi very soon. She's Colonel – currently, what would you tell, even though she knows us, but she's been away for a long time, what would you like Commissioner Heidi to know coming into this new position for her?
Oh, I would like her to know, and I think she does know this, mm-hmm. and I've shared it in my brief, that there's a great department here. There are great women. And I put the question into the brief. I said, you know, I'm not a traditional women's ministries person,
mm-hmm.
but I have always asked the question if 50% or more of the people we minister to are women,
mm-hmm.
how are you finding out what they need, where their hearts and souls are, and how are you responding? And that's what I would – so those are question things, aren't
mm-hmm.
they? And I shared that in the brief with her, and I would just want her to know that people in this territory care about ministry with and to and for and alongside women
mm-hmm.
of all sizes, shapes, socioeconomic, of all kinds, and that there's tremendous work that's being done. It may not always look and package in the same way, but the solid piece of connecting. I think your work with Embrace has been really demonstrated that has been really instrumental in that, that people connect with each other mm-hmm. and we know how to care about each other and we mm-hmm. listen differently and ask different questions. So be excited about that.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. Well, thank you for joining me and giving our listeners just a little bit of insight, some really rich insight into leadership and into your life. Thank you.
Oh, thanks, Sarah. My pleasure.
Thanks again for listening to the Prepare podcast. Tune in later this month when I sit down for a quick Q&A with Commissioner Heidi Bailey. See you next time.